Okay, you guys, here we go. She Runs Ultras, episode number 212. Well, it's been a hot second since we have done a My First 50K episode, and I am really excited for you guys to hear this one because Kim is just so freaking amazing, you guys. She went all in on running her first 50K, which was actually a 60K. And because she lives in Colorado, she had to train in some pretty crazy conditions, basically over the winter for sort of a first thing in the spring race. Guys, when I say literally, she went through everything, I mean, she went through so many things, and she still was able to persevere and overcome. So I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. One quick note before I let you go and you dive in. We had a little volume issue. So when we transition from here to the music, you may want to turn the volume up. I did my best. I am not a professional podcast episode editor, but we did our best here. But I just want to give you the heads up because it might get soft and you might need to turn the volume up. But all that said, you are still going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, I am excited to introduce you to newly minted ultra runner, Kim Mercier.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Kim Mercier and I'm based out of Larkspur, Colorado. So we live in the foothills outside of Colorado Springs. And as far as running goes, I was a runner in high school. So I started running when I was about 4 or 5 years old, actually competing in track events. But my distance was always the 400 meter or the 800 meter. So long sprint, but very short distance. And that was just who I was and what I did. And I ran all the way through high school, had plans of running in college, and due to injury, didn't run in college. And so it was something that kind of fell off as I had injury and just never started running again. I tried to run a couple of times later in life and just still always had injury problems. So it just never became a part of who I was. As far as injuries go, what it was is I had shin splints, but it was due to a birth defect. It was something that was more severe than normal from an insulin perspective. So my shins would just be killing me all the time. I picked it up this was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. It was right before the pandemic. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start running again. We live on dirt roads. Let me give this a shot and see how it feels. But I never went above 2-3 miles. So it was more just casual jogging on the dirt roads and trails by the house. Something that I had ever really expanded beyond that. And then as far as this goes, is I had never actually run anything over a couple of miles in my life. Even in track when I was in high school, anytime they're like, we're gonna go out for a long run, it was, no, I'm good, I don't want to do that. Oh, my shins hurt, I can't do 3 miles today, the doctor wouldn't let me do that. So
you had a
so
built-in excuse.
I had a great built-in excuse. So this run truly was my furthest run that I have ever done in my entire life. Had never done marathons, never done a half marathon, just jumped right in and went for a 60K.
I love it. So what was the thing that sort of was like the initial spark where you were like, I'm not even going to bother with any of those shorter distances. I'm just going to go straight for the ultra. Like what, walk us through that thought process. If there was one, maybe it was just like a middle of the night. You were like, this looks good. And you just hit sign up.
I think in retrospect, I'm just psychotic. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. It was just this, it was exactly that. So it was, I do mounted shooting. So my main sport that I do is cowboy mounted shooting. So I shoot single action 45s off of my horses at full speed. I am one of the top shooters in the country. So we have 6 levels in our sport. You start as a beginner, as a level 1, and it goes up to level 6. And I am a level 5. And I compete at a really high level in horse sports and travel all around the country. I compete at least 20 weeks out of the year on the weekends that I'm competing. And the part that has hindered me from getting to a level 6 is my mental game. And I don't know if it was, we're big documentary fans, and so we're always watching all of these documentaries about rock climbers and runners and river athletes and all sorts of things. And I don't know if that just got so ingrained into my mind of watching all these documentaries on ultra athletes. Yeah. And they always focus on the mental game. Everything about it is like, well, I can climb that mountain without ropes, but it's all mental. It has nothing to do with my physical capabilities. Yeah. And I just woke up one day and I was like, you know what? I'm going to run a fucking ultra marathon. Like, here I go. I'm jumping in. I'm just going to run one. And I had no concept of which one I wanted to run or how you start or any of what it looks like. It was truly couch to ultra was my goal. And in my head, being an athlete, whether that's high school track or the horse stuff, I knew that it wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to give myself 6 weeks. So I was like, in 6 months, I'm running an ultra marathon.
Yeah.
And that was really what started. It was truly just waking up one day and it's like, this is it. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell everybody I'm doing it.
Massive accountability, public, massive accountability. But can we just go back for a second? Cause like you told, you talked a little bit about like the mounted shooting, but you were very much like, you know, oh yeah. And I do this other thing. Like I have ridden horses. I have shot pistols. Like I couldn't do both at the same time. Like that is super, super, super hard. How did you even get into that?
Yeah, good question. So it's another one of those things that it was like, wake up and decide that you're going to do it one day. I had seen it. So we have a stock show here in Colorado and it was at the stock show. And I saw it and I was like, well, that looks pretty cool. I have a horse. And then I kind of ignored it. And a woman who did it that was one of the trainers and one of the top in our sport actually lived a mile down the street from me. And so one day I was like, you know, maybe I'll do a lesson. That could be fun. Just try it, see what happens. And my horse took to it. Like she showed up and you stand on the ground and you start shooting guns off the ground just to see if your horse has any reaction. And he just stood there calmly. And she hands me a pistol and she goes, get on, here we go. And I hopped on my horse and I shot some rounds off of him and he just stood there quietly. And I was like, shit, there goes all money that I've ever made in my life because this is now my sport. And that's really what got me into it was that same thing of like, let's try something. And then it just took.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that it took where I was like, 100% vested in it. The first year I might've done 3 competitions. The second year I just did Colorado competitions. So maybe a handful of them. And then as I realized that I was good, I realized that my horse was good. All of a sudden it just clicked. And I was like, this is what I'm doing. We went from having one horse and I traveled on occasion to we now have 3 horses. We have horse property. All 3 horses shoot. I have this giant RV on wheels that I travel around the country with my 3 horses on. I've traveled as far as Tennessee, actually like driven as far as Tennessee with my horses, but I've also competed in North Carolina, in Florida, in Georgia, usually flying in and borrowing other horses. But it's I think that also goes to some of the ultra aspects of it is there are times where I'm traveling and we'll talk about my run in a little bit, but I'm traveling 20 hours in a horse trailer without stopping and staying up all night and just, it's fine. It's what you do. And you're just sitting still driving for 20 plus hours. So it's become an addiction, a very, very, very expensive addiction.
People say the same thing about ultras, but I think you have that your second addiction is more than running ultras. Cause that's you. Now you're talking about ammo. You're talking about another living being, feeding, you know, housing, training, all that stuff. So that's crazy. Oh, I love it.
Every day, my husband's like, why do we have horses? And then when I got into ultra running, he goes, I thought you said cheap sport. Cheap is the key there. And I was like, no, it's like, I have $500 worth of shoes. That's cheap to me.
Well, yeah, in context, like how much does it cost to feed? I mean, you're probably just letting them, well, not right now, graze, but like how much does it cost to feed a horse every year? It's got to be way less than $500. I mean, way more than $500. Yeah.
Way more than $500. And it's the feeding part's the cheap part to have 3 of them. It's all the rest of the stuff. And so my main horse Gambler, he's who I started on and he's 23 years old. So he's elderly. He actually broke his hip 4 years ago. And we rehabbed him back from a broken hip to still be a top competitor. But he gets massage, he gets acupuncture, he gets laser. And I mean, I probably spend a couple $100 a month just on his well-being.
Yep.
And then I'm like, well, I guess we're eating ramen. It's fine. We don't need to focus on us.
How does a horse break a hip? Just as a, like a side note, did he have a fall? Like that seems like a pretty severe break.
We actually have no idea. He was on 300 acres with 20 other horses, and we just came out one day and he had a broken hip. And we did a lot of holistic rehab to get him back and running, and a lot of time and tears and money spent.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So when will he age out? Like when will you stop using him for competitions?
The day that he dies. He is that type of horse. He was supposed to retire last year. So I had my last shoot on him. It's actually lined up with some of my ultra training. So in August, I had my very last shoot on him. Like I just knew in my heart, like, this is it. He's retiring. Great. Now I can focus on my ultra. I can focus on all of my training for myself. I have two other horses, but you know, we'll worry about them next summer. And the one already shoots and is a competitor as well. But it was just something where I was like, oh, now I can shift my focus and focus on something else. And he did not allow it. So he actually went to Arizona with me for my ultra run. And he gets pretty assertive when he wants to go. So he'll push you around and he'll bite you and be like, I'm going. So he came out of his very short 4-month retirement. And he'll just continue to run until he tells me no. I don't want to inject him or have to drug him up to be a top competitor. So he's doing it all drug free. He's on some holistic joint stuff, but outside of that, I don't want to get to that point. But he'll tell me when he's ready. And sometimes it might just be, hey mom, I need a break for a couple of months. But I think he'll be running until he's probably 28, 30 years old.
And oh my goodness.
He's going to end up dying running. It's just what he loves to do.
I mean, just, you know, that there's, if you're a horse and that's your thing, there's no better way to go, right?
Yep, exactly.
So the other two horses, and I we'll get to the running in a second. I just like super interested in this, but like you mentioned that you just got a new one, right? You just got a new horse?
Yeah. So we got a baby horse because that was a smart pandemic decision is to buy a baby horse. And try to train it from the start.
That's what I was going to ask. Because I think you mentioned one of them already shoots. So that's like your other horse, right? And did that one come to you like pre-trained? No.
No, I've trained all of them how to shoot on my own. Mm. So the other one's actually a wild Mustang. So we have a 9-year-old wild Mustang. He was captured from Wyoming at the age of about 2. And then he started his training program about the age of 4. So that was the first time that he ever had human contact was 4. And the last I've owned him for just about 5 years now, or I guess just over 5 years now. So he was part of, if anybody looks into it, it's called the Extreme Mustang Challenge. And trainers have 90 days to grab a wild Mustang out of holding and train it to be rideable and do all sorts of things that they have on the list that they have to do. I did not do that. I purchased him off of somebody who did it, but I got him after his 90 days as an extreme Mustang horse. And then I was like, he's going to be a mounted shooting horse. It's totally fine. There's not very many of them, but here I go. And this is what he's going to do. And most days he loves it. There's other days that he prefers to just stand around and eat, but, he likes having a job. He likes people, and he's probably the calmest, most docile horse I've ever owned in my life.
That's interesting considering that he was a wild. Yeah. That's crazy.
And I always tell everybody, I'm like, his claim to fame is eating. Like I think he realized being in Wyoming, and Wyoming is cold and snowy. And in the wintertime, they're living out there with no food. Like they are scavenging the earth and just trying to find out what to eat. He loves food more than anything on the face of the earth. So you can get that horse to do anything by just giving him a cookie. And by cookies, like Fig Newtons, a Wheat Thin. He eats very similar to what we eat as ultra athletes. It's like banana bread. He will do anything for a snack. Anything.
Oh my God. I love it. Okay. You're going to have to send us pictures. You're going to have to post some pictures. I think one day you were out feeding the horses when we were on a call, and you like all three of them were sort of lined up, like, you know, taking hay out of the barrel, but like, you're going to have to share some pictures with us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So you got this wild, crazy idea that you were going to run an ultra. You were going to skip all the shorter distances and go for a 60K, no less, as your first race. Were you like soliciting input from other people on what race you chose? Or did you just like open up ultra sign up and go, okay, that's the one?
So I had a woman that I worked with. Her brother had run the same race that I ran. So I ran the Black Canyon 60K in Arizona. I gave myself 6 months and I started in the summer. So I kind of looked at it from the perspective of what can I run in January, February timeframe to be able to give myself enough time to train. But she had mentioned something. She was like, oh, my brother ran this ultra. And it was just in a work setting. It was before I ever thought about running an ultra. It was, oh, it was really cool. And it was down in the Black Canyon area. And I grew up in Arizona, so I knew where it was. And it was just a passerby conversation. And so when I looked at ultra sign up and said, what's happening in that time frame, I looked and I was like, oh, there's that one. Becky's brother ran it. I should ask Becky, did your brother like it? Was it nice? And so I asked her a couple of questions and she goes, yeah, he loved it. It was really nice weather. And the reason that I chose it is because it lined perfectly with a 2 week horse competition that is in Arizona at the same time. And I was like, well, let's kill two birds with one stone. Who doesn't run 60K and then 2 or 3 days later, hop on a horse and start competing? So I planned it as a trip that I could take and be able to run and then drive back down and be able to start shooting off my horses 3 days afterwards.
I love it. Like you said, kill two birds with one stone, do all the sports, get all the sports out of the way in one trip.
might as well, right? If you're going to do a vacation race, you might as well have other things to do while you're there.
Yeah. So you gave yourself 6 months. How did you start? Because we didn't start working together right at the beginning of that. So you did a bunch of training on your own. Sort of walk us through how you started yourself out, because by that point you to your admission, you were doing a couple miles here or there, but you weren't really training, so to speak.
Yeah, so I'd say my first couple of months I truly just ran. I had no rhyme or reason. I upped my mileage, but not by very much. So I'd go out every 2 or 3 days a week. I'd go out and do 2 miles. We have a nice little loop around the house. That's 1.75 miles ish. And so I'd go out and I'd run that. And then sometimes it was the 3 mile loop. Okay, I'll go out and do the 3 mile loop, but there was no purpose behind it. And there was no training plan as far as like, oh, I have to do this, then I have to do this. I just knew I had to increase my mileage. I'd have to go back and look. It was probably 6 or 7 weeks in. I just downloaded some plan off the internet. And was like, hey, let's go ahead and follow this plan and see what happens. It was actually a pretty decent plan, in all honesty. There was strength training in there. There was walking in there. There was obviously increasing your mileage. There were up weeks and down weeks. So in general, it wasn't a bad plan. But I'd have to go back and remember how I even found you. I think I just truly looked for podcasts on ultra running. And you were one of the first ones that popped up. And I started listening to it while I was running. And I was like, oh, there's actually things that you have to do behind this whole ultra running thing. You didn't just run and start to increase it and call it good. I might have been okay following this random plan that I found on the internet, but it was something that the more that I listened to your podcast and the more that I realized that there was so much more that went into it. Like the nutrition was something that this plan didn't talk about. It was just a running plan. So I didn't even start my nutrition journey until I started training with you and getting more involved, where it was like, oh, you're supposed to actually focus on these things. I knew I'd have to eat, but it was, well, I'll just eat, right? Like when I'm hungry, I'll eat. There was no thought or plan behind it. So the more that I started listening, the more I was like, okay, I need somebody to be able to help me. And then that's when I joined your Facebook group and started looking. And it was just luck of the draw. I want to say after I started listening to your podcast, it was probably 2 weeks later that you opened up for membership.
Oh,
so
that's right.
It was perfect timing.
Yeah, that's perfect. The stars were aligned, Kim. It was meant to be.
The stars were aligned.
So you got to, you started to increase your miles. We got into the group. You started to use the Run Your First 50K training plan. Was there a certain point where you were like, either one way or the other, where you were like, oof, I don't know what I've signed up for, or like, oh yeah, no, I'm totally on the right track?
I think there were ups and downs along the whole journey. So I would say up until about November, it was like, yeah, this feels pretty good. I'm on the right track. But I wasn't running more than, I'd have to go back and actually look at the training plan. But at that point, I don't think I was running more than 10 miles, which it's funny because I'd go back and tell friends and like, I ran my longest run I've ever run today. It was, you know, 7.2 miles and get really excited about it. And so I felt like it felt really good until about the November timeframe, which is when Colorado starts getting cold and snowy and icy. And that's where, I mean, I had so many ups and downs during my training where there were times I have a couple of runs in mind where I know exactly like the point in time where I was like, oh, fuck this. I quit. I don't want to do this. And one was, it was super icy. It was probably 20 degrees. And it's the same trail I run all the time because it's the one that's next door to our house. And I wasn't even a mile in and I'm running up this little hill and I'm in pain and I don't feel good. And I just broke down into tears. And I was like, I can't do this. Like I've been training. I just ran 14 miles last week and all of a sudden I can't make it a mile up a hill without my legs being in shooting pain. Like they're just cramping and they're tired. My body's tired. Like I can't do this. And I had plenty of runs that were that way throughout the winter. And a lot of it was that snow and that ice where it was just like, I don't know if I can do this. This is really, really hard. I from a nutrition standpoint, I never had a spot where it was like, oh, I can't do this because I can't eat enough. From a strength training perspective, it was never like, oh, I can't do this because I don't do strength training. It was all the runs. I mean, I probably had half a dozen where it took everything inside of me not to just quit and say, you know what, I did enough. I've run, 15 miles. I'm going to call it a day.
Yeah. Two things that stood out to me there is like, I think at some point you posted in the group about like moving X number of bales of hay. You're like, I don't think I can skip my strength training today because I just moved this whole trailer full of hay. I was like, that'll do it. Like, that's definitely a great, I think you called it like, did you call it like farm girl strength training or something?
We call it farm CrossFit. We're going to start charging money for it for anybody that wants to come out and just give us money to do our chores for us.
Yeah.
It would be fantastic.
The second thing that I recall is I think within the span of I think 3 or 4 days, you posted one picture where you were, fully snowed in, like you were out for that. It may have even been that exact run where you were like running up the hill, you were covered in snow, like your eyelashes were frozen. And then within 2 or 3 days, it was 80 degrees and you were like, I'm outside and it's mud season now because everything melted. And so like you vacillated between the two extremes within the span of just a couple days.
Oh yeah. And that's Colorado. It's very temperamental with its weather. This year in particular, we've gotten rain and snow and mud. It's snowing right now. Actually, it's like 15 degrees and snowing and it was 75 degrees 2 days ago. And so that was my whole training. It was everything, even the weather was up and down and you had to plan accordingly and it can happen in 4 or 5 hours. So some of my long runs were -5 when I started and then they would be 40 degrees by the time I finished. And trying to plan for it, dress for it, your body acclimate to it as you're running. I definitely have one of my longer runs that was right as I started to taper. It was supposed to be 30 miles. And I got to mile 25 and it just never warmed up. And it was snowy and it was wet and it never warmed up. And I was soaked to the bone. And I just quit. I really did. My dog was cold. He was shivering. And I got to the point where I was like, you know what? We're stopping for the day. And it was one of those moments where it was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like I just quit. And now I feel like I gave up and I got home and I was convulsive shaking, just freezing to death. And I got in the bath. My husband's like, you were probably near hypothermic. Probably good that you quit. Don't feel like a quitter because you did what your body was telling you to do. It wasn't quitting because you just didn't feel like it or you were running too slow. It was your body was truly telling you, time out. You can't do another 5 miles.
Do you feel like that helped you? Because I remember we talked right before you did your race and we were trying to game plan your kit, all the gear that you were going to wear, because at the start of the race, of your actual race, it was going to be cold and then it was going to get super warm. So it sounds like even though it sounded like a real pain in the ass for you to have to go through that, that it might have actually been really helpful because it helped you mentally and physically prepare for race day when it was going to be cold at the beginning and then warm up and you were going to have to go through a pretty significant temperature change. I think it was like 30 or 40 degrees, right?
Yeah. The race started at about like 28 degrees, I think is what it was when we started. It was under 30, but it wasn't freezing. And there had to have been a point in the race where it got up to 70 degrees. I mean, it was a pretty big temperature change as you're running. Cause you start at, higher elevation. I think the spot that we started was about 4,000 feet in elevation, and you went down to just under 2,000 feet. And so that temperature change is huge, especially in the wintertime. So I do think that it helped. I think where it probably hindered me was I haven't run in 60 or 70 degree weather since the summertime. So that there was definitely a point in the race where it was hotter. It was probably about 2 p.m. So that hot point of the day. And I drank through my whole bladder in 5 miles because I was just thirsty. I could feel myself getting a little dehydrated. And it was just, I just forgot what it was like to run in heat at that point, even though, 70 isn't that hot, but in retrospective, it is when you're running in negative 15.
I think 70 is hot. Like around here, when it gets up into the 70s, like it takes up in the Northeast in New Hampshire where I am, it takes like a while for us to get up there, and then when we get into the 80s and 90s, like I'm not conditioned for the hot stuff, the 80s, the 90s, the 100s. So I think it's all relative is what I'm trying to say. Like 70 to me, to go from 28 to 70, I probably would have been like, sports bra and shorts by that point. And I just would have been like sweating buckets, like not able to handle that swing, that temperature swing.
Yeah. And I was very blessed in my race, I guess a couple of years ago, it got up into the 90s. And there's no way, I'm the same way. I mean, Colorado, yeah, we get into the 80s and 90s, but I don't function well in heat. So I don't go outside when it's 90 degrees. And so I'm very blessed that the race ended up being not that hot. I'd rather start cold and have it get up to 70 than have it, start a little warmer and get up to 90 degrees, because I just don't know if I would have been able to physically survive.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk a little bit about the race. Like it's a decent sized race, right? Because there were other distances that were going on like on the same weekend. But if people aren't familiar with the Black Canyon race, I'm just going to call it a series because there's multiple races there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when I first signed up, it was not this case. And I, again, signed up because it was near a mountain shooting event and it just sounded like, hey, I can do that. That's really great. And from a mental perspective for me, my whole goal was I want to be strong enough mentally and physically to be able to run a 60K and 3 days later, hop on a horse and run 5 stages, 45 miles an hour. That was really my goal. And so when I signed up, there weren't that many runners. And it's a relatively big race because it's wintertime in Arizona. So a lot of people come from out of state. It's always been a bigger race. But then I want to say, I don't know when it was, and maybe is they came out with the Ultra World Series.
Is that what they call it? Mm-hmm.
World Trail Series. I think they call it the World Trail Series. This is the only race in the United States that's part of the World Trail Series. World Trail Majors. There we go. The World Trail Majors. This is the only U.S. race. And they added it. It was probably December that they announced that. And all of a sudden, entrants just hopped right up. So they do 100K and a 60K. The 100K, they capped at 1,300 runners. And they had 1,300 runners. The 60K, they tapped at 1,300 runners, I think, as well, or maybe 1,000. And there were 500 runners. So this was not a small race. It ended up, the series had close to 2,000 runners, but the 60K had 500 runners, or right around there, which is massive.
Yeah, that is a lot. Like to have 500 people, and in the greater context of all, and have an additional 1,300. That is quite. That to me, I haven't been to a race that size for a while. Like back in when I would run road marathons, yeah, you'd have that. That would easily be the baseline attendance for the race, and it would go up from there. So it's interesting to hear, oh yeah, there were 500 people in this race.
Yeah. And it was crazy. They had a Facebook page and they did a really great job of being able to promote it, but they kept talking about all these elite athletes signing up. So it would be like, hey, this person signed up from Belgium. This person signed up from Canada. And I'm sitting there thinking, what did I get myself into? Like every elite in the world decided, let's come to Arizona and race. And here I am like, well, this sounds like a great first race.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you managed to get yourself and your horses and your whole setup all down to Arizona. So you had to remind me, you had to park your setup at the fairgrounds or wherever the competition was and then go to the race. And that was 40 minutes away.
So it was a hot mess, and it'll get into some of my struggles that I had with my race. So the week leading up to it, we were getting snow and they kept calling for snow to happen on Thursday. Well, Arizona got a really big storm. It was when all of the atmospheric rivers were happening in California. And so Arizona was on the tail end of that. And my parents live outside of Flagstaff. So my mom's about an hour from the start of the race. They got 5 feet of snow between Monday and Thursday of the race. And the race area was supposed to get like 9 inches of rain or something insane, like you know, record level rain for that time of the year. And so all this weather's coming in. And it was, you know, the prepping portion of it, which I'm used to prepping with my horses for going on vacations and taking them with me. But it was, I booked flights, I booked hotels, I had trailer plans ready, I had my horse's vet certificates ready. It was, I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be a game day decision on how I get to Arizona and whether horses come with me, whether I, you know, my husband comes with me, whether I even run this stupid race at this point, because this weather is just out of control. So we ended up leaving early. My husband decided he was not going to come because of having to leave early and work, and flights were $1,000 round trip because the Phoenix Open was happening. Like, yeah, it was just all the stuff and things. We had a detour the way that we normally would go to Arizona. It usually takes us about 14 hours. It was going to take us about 21, 22 hours. So we had a detour all the way down to basically Mexico and then come back up to Phoenix. And I took a friend's daughter, so she's 18. So I took my teenager with me, and she was supposed to stay with a friend. And then I was actually going to take my horse trailer to the midpoint, to the Bumblebee Ranch, and stay in my horse trailer since I already had it with me. And the lady from Bumblebee Ranch called the day before, and she's like, "Yeah, there's no way you're getting a horse trailer in and out of here. The mud is like 2 feet deep. There is absolutely no way you're coming in and out because we've gotten so much rain." So last minute, I had to book a hotel at the start of the race, and I left my horse trailer and drove up the hill. It was about an hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes from where the horses were to where the start of the race was. So a pretty good journey up there to get there. But I got a hotel the night before. So
who was watching your horses?
My teenager that I travel with.
Okay, all right, got it.
We've been traveling together for about 5 years. She's now 18. So she stayed in my horse trailer. She took care of my dog. She took care of my horses. Probably the best travel partner you can ask for. When I got done with the race, it was the same. She was the one that still fed the horses for like 3 days because I was like, I can't move. And she was like, don't worry, Gambler's already fed. And I gave him his grain. Do you want me to take him out and ride him and brush him? And she just did all the stuff and things to be able to make sure that my horses were taken care of. And
I love it. Well, you should definitely give her a shout out. What's her first name?
Her name's Faith, and she's my BFF travel buddy. So excellent. We have matching shirts and everything.
I love it. Team Kim. Are they Team Kim? Team Kim. Gambler? All right, so you've overcome all of those. Oh, and wait, you didn't even tell the other part about the truck, now that I'm remembering this story.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep. So to add on top of all the stress, our truck broke down it was Sunday. We went to turn on, the check engine light came on, and we have a diesel. And anybody that knows diesels is they now have to have this stuff called DEF that you put in them. And our DEF heater went out. So you cannot physically drive the truck. It does not allow you. It stops running when that doesn't work. And so I had to go in Monday into the shop and you know, since the pandemic, it seems like car dealerships, they just, parts are delayed and they can't get to you and it takes forever. And I walked into the shop on Monday and I was like, I have to have this on Wednesday. I don't think you guys realize, but I have to have this on Wednesday because I have to drive horses 2,000 miles to Arizona. And they got it done for me. And I baked the guy lots of cookies and took them in. It's like, I can't, like, thank you so much. Here's my famous peanut butter cookies. I really need you to realize how important it was and just the fact that you were able to get that done. So it was truly all the stuff and things that could hit the week before hit. My husband's grandmother passed away the night before we were leaving, which was one of the other reasons that he didn't come. So it was like all the stuff and things that could happened. And it just kept building up. And
yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, that might have quit after one of those scenarios happening, right? Like, oh, the truck isn't going to be fixable. Oh, okay. Well, I guess I won't do it. And then, you know, to have all, you know, the weather and the travel and the, you know, everything. I mean, like, hats off to you for like, you know, pushing through and really, you know, because you did also have like, I don't want to say an ulterior motive, but like you had a secondary motive, which was to get to this shooting competition as well. So you sort of had a vested interest in trying to get all of these things to happen, like all the stars to align so that you could get down there and do both things.
Yeah. And I think, like, for me, it's, and I can talk a little bit about all the struggles that I had leading up to the start of the race. So it's the traveling and all of that and just the stress behind it. And I'm so used to traveling with the horses now that it's not like this is out of the norm. My truck's broke down before, you blow tires. We've had trips where we were heading to Las Vegas one year and we quite literally blew two tires and it's 120 degrees and you're sitting on the side of the highway with six horses in the trailer and you have no tires and you're calling friends of like, hey, is anybody out in the middle of the desert and willing to bring us a tire? And I mean, things happen and it just is the nature of it. So you just kind of roll with the punches and hope for the best, but it adds to that stress and it adds to everything. And I have some really good friends. And one of the things that I think I learned along the way is just that community, whether it's the ultra running community. And my mounted shooting community is family at this point. And it's probably one of the best sports that I've ever had when it comes to community and family. And I had so many friends that were supporting me and helping me along the way. And my friend Crystal, I'm telling her all these things that are happening. She's like, just fly down and do your race. And I was like, but my goal was to ride horses after. Like the running portion was one thing, but I wanted to be mentally tough enough to be able to ride horses afterwards. And she goes, huh, you're right. You did. Like, then fucking do that. Like, then just get your shit together, get your horses down there and just do it. Like, that's what you said you're going to do. That's what you need to do. And so just those people that kind of pushed me along the way as well. And so there's that stress that goes into it. And then you eat like crap. So that was one of the things that I didn't take into account or plan for is when you're sitting in a truck for 20 hours, I think I don't even know what I ate for breakfast, probably a Pop-Tart and like six things of coffee. And then as I'm driving, I don't drink water or enough water. So it's like I might have had two bottles of water in 20 hours and at least a dozen Red Bulls. And then we stopped for Panda at like 8 p.m. and we ate Panda Express because that's what you eat when you're at truck stops on the road. And we woke up the next morning and we had coffee and we had about 5 hours to drive to get all the way to where the horses were. So you have a little bit of coffee and again, probably a Pop-Tart because that's what I have sitting in my trailer. And then we get there and it's go, go, go because you have to get your horses out and you have to feed them and water them and get them set up and you have to get your trailer set up. And so I'm doing all of these things and not paying attention to, hey, you're about to run this race and you need to drink. I was to the point where I was probably drinking close to a gallon of water a day. I was focusing on my nutrition until the last 3 days.
Yeah.
And then all of that went out the window. And I eat like shit when I'm doing mounted shooting competitions in general. I get nervous, goes back to the mental game. So I don't eat well. I'm eating garbage. I'm going out to eat to these greasy restaurants all the time. I'm not drinking enough water. And so I spent 3 days doing that and not focusing on what I needed to focus on, not sleeping because we're all hanging out and having a good time. So I probably got 4 or 5 hours of sleep every night. And then on top of it all, the water heater in my horse trailer blew up when we got there. So water was spraying everywhere. So we had no hot water. And there was the stress of like, I don't know, my whole trailer's flooding and how do I stop this? And what does that look like? And so it was kind of a hot mess leading up into race day. And I just focused on the horse things like I always do, which in hindsight, I will never, ever, ever, ever do another horse competition and ultra at the same time for that reason. I was sick to my stomach the night before. And my mom was there with me and she goes, well, is it nerves? And I'm like, no, mom, it's because I eat like shit and haven't drank anything in 4 days. And it was just like I had diarrhea and it was just like all the stuff and things in my stomach. And it was truly just because of the stress of the travel and the horse stuff and the not eating. And then all of a sudden my body was like, hey, I'm still here. By the way, you do realize you've been training and, you know, this wasn't healthy for you to do this. And so it was the night before I had a hard time eating dinner. I forced myself to eat a cheese quesadilla, but I definitely did not have a good nutrition plan going in for the first or the 3 days leading up to it.
Yeah. Well, and that was like, it's interesting because that was part of the plan, not all the crazy stuff that happened, but the part of the plan was to do these two things and to like, you know, drop the horses off and then go to the run and then come back. But it sort of illustrates that like, A, anything can happen. And B, if you're not sort of dialed in and paying attention to both things that you, it's super easy. And I'm not faulting you at all because I've definitely made all those similar mistakes, but just in a different context. Like it's really easy to lose track of what's important and like what you should really be focusing on, you know, and prepping. But from a road trip perspective, like when you were describing you know, like the not drinking a lot except for all the Red Bulls and eating Panda Express. Like in a previous life, I used to drive a lot, like would, you know, do a lot of events and have to drive to and from them. And I was just sort of laughing internally because I was like, that's exactly my experience. It's like you have to drive there. You have a finite amount of time. You can't stop to pee every 5 seconds. So like you time your liquids accordingly. It's probably some sort of energy drink. And then you just chow down on whatever truck stop. When you said the word truck stop, I was like, oh man, we could have like a whole podcast about all of our truck stop experiences, I'm sure. Cause you probably had some, I've definitely had some, like you eat whatever is at the truck stop, you know? So.
and it was, I think it's hard because I prepped so well, like I did my race day prep and I did my, you know, my practice race day and everything. But what I didn't take into account when I'm doing that was like, okay, so I woke up as if it was race day. Like the night before, I ate a good meal. I went to bed at 8 o'clock. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning and everything was already packed and ready to go. And I started to do my race day plan. What I didn't take into account was the horse stuff, where it was like, I almost should have like keep myself awake all night and like practice that. I didn't practice that because it was like, well, I'm practicing my race day strategy, not the fact that I put these two things on top of each other. And I practice, I'd go out and run 20 miles and then hop on my horse. So I practice the after and saying like, okay, I can run and then ride a horse and not feel like I'm going to die. So I practiced that, but there wasn't I should know better. I've been traveling long enough that it just wasn't something that I even considered practicing of like, can I stay up all night and, you know, only drink Red Bulls and see if I can still go out and run the next morning without dying?
Well, I don't know that you necessarily should have known better. This is your first time and your last apparently doing this. So it's like, I feel as though it's just like anything else, right? You have to at least make the mistake or make the decision to do something once and then learn whether or not it was truly a mistake or if there are ways that you could tweak it in order for it to work for you. Like I'm sure you say this will never be the last time, but my bet is that if the opportunity arises that you might try to do this again, but you'll have all of this experience to work off of the next time and you won't make those same mistakes. You won't make those same decisions. And you'll probably have a better, I mean, not that you didn't have a good outcome here, but like the whole experience will be better.
Yeah. And I say that and then, you know, they always have the same race. The Black Canyon Ultra is always the same time frame as this competition in Arizona. Yeah. So ask me next February.
Yeah, I know. That's why I just want to put that look. That was my way to like put an asterisk right there. Just say, okay. All right. So you get to, you go by all of these, you know, go through all these challenges. You get to race day. Walk us through race day. How does that go?
Yeah. So I wake up in the morning and I'm still not feeling great. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take an Imodium, make sure that, you know, I get that. I drink a ton of water. You know, first thing in the morning before the race started. And by a ton, it wasn't like so much that I was bloated or so much that I couldn't handle it, but it was like, okay, I'm going to drink 2 or 3 bottles of water, make sure that I'm ready to go. I ate breakfast. My pre-run breakfast is not a big breakfast. I just can't do it. So it was like a banana is for me breakfast. So I ate breakfast and I go to the race start and it's, you know, 20 degrees, 28 degrees, whatever it is. And I'm in my sweats and the race coordinator did such a great job of like, we know it's cold. So they give you these little baggies so you can put your sweats in them and just toss them on the football field. And then that way you can be warm and pick them up. And I was like, well, maybe I'll run in my sweats for the first couple of miles. And all of a sudden I see all these people start stripping down into their shorts. And I was like, I'm just going to run in shorts for the first few miles. It's Arizona. It's going to warm up. It's going to be fine. Like it's cold right now, but it's going to be fine. I did stretching. I felt great from a physical body perspective, minus the stomach stuff. But I was like, all right, like I'm ready for this. And it was just incredible to see how many people truly were there. So you started at a high school football field. I know a lot of races do that where they can find a track or something to start at. There was just a lot of energy and a lot of people that were really excited. It was cool to watch some of the things that the elite athletes do. There were a couple of, I don't know how many they had. I think they had like 35 people that ended up doing the 100K the day before and the 60K the next day. So it was cool to like watch the elite athletes, right? And that to me, even in mountain shooting, it's that cool thing of like, oh, what are they doing? Are they, you know, focusing heads mm-hmm. down? Are they chit-chatting? Are they just, what is their game day? Like get my game face on, get ready to go. So it was cool to be able to watch that. it was, you know, they had video cameras, so that was live streamed the entire time. Just a lot of really cool hype around it, which was fun to sit there and be a part of and be able to watch. I'd say the thing that got me, I think, at the start of the race was, one, because it is one of the trail majors, is I felt it was more competitive than maybe other ultras are. Like, there were definitely some people that, like, we're here to win it. And, like, I don't talk to other people. And so I didn't get necessarily the sense of community that I think you do in smaller races. Mm-hmm. And this being my first race and the only one that I've run so far, I didn't get that sense of, like, camaraderie. Like, there was a little bit, but it was pretty, like, people are quiet. They have their headphones on. Like, they're in race mode. So they kick off the race and it's the same thing. I think that, I don't remember if I told the group this or talked about it, but it was like everybody, like, they start sprinting. And I was like, oh no, I'm not sprinting out of here. I'm not insane. And so you run around the track and then you run about 2 miles on pavement to get to the dirt trails. And there are people that are flat out like 5 minute miles sprinting. And by people, I mean like hundreds of people are sprinting. And I just kept my pace. And I was like, I'm just going to keep my pace. And people are flying past me. And that was one of those mental things that I think was one of those things that clicked right there. Like, it was the first, I don't know, quarter mile of that race that it clicked, where it was in mounted shooting. I don't like other people beating me. I struggle a lot when somebody does something better than me, or when somebody has a better time than me. I can't watch my competitors because it gets into my head that, well, you know, they did this and what if I don't? And I'm sitting there running and people are flying past me and I'm perfectly okay with it. I'm like, good for you. Like, have fun. Good for you. I'm keeping my pace. Like, I'm watching myself. I don't want to go out too hard because I don't want to get injured or tired. And so I think that was the first time that it clicked, that it was like, all right, all this training, like, my mental game was right there. Do what you got to do. Like, you guys have fun.
I love it.
If I'm bottom of the pack, I'm bottom of the pack. So I, you know, kept my pace and ran. There were definitely, like, the first couple of miles, some interesting things that happened along the way as well that I had not planned for or seen before. Traffic jams. Mm-hmm. They're real when there's 500 runners. And we got to a spot, we weren't even 5 miles in, and it wasn't even a big hill for me coming from Colorado. It was, I don't know if I'd even call it a hill. And people were walking. And it's single track and there's cactuses on all sides, so you can't pass them. And it was a line of probably 40, 50 people just walking. And it's almost frustrating where you're like, well, oh, now I know why everybody sprints out of there, because everybody sprints to get to the top. Not because they're elite runners and they want to win. Some of them absolutely are. But some people just want to get ahead of those traffic jams. And it wasn't, I didn't even think that that was a thing. I had no idea until I got stuck in them that I was like, oh, huh. Well, this is weird, because my plan wasn't to walk in the first 5 miles. Like, if there was a big hill or there was something, but the first 5 miles are slow, single track, flowy. I have no plan of walking. So like that one, that came as a pretty big shock to me.
So how did you handle that? Like, you know, if the theme for this is sort of like Kim's mental game, right? Like, how did you handle that from a mental perspective? Sort of just being confronted with, oh, now I'm in this conga line. And I, cause you were saying, and I've been in a similar situation where it's like, yeah, there's this conga line, but there's some actual physical restrictions. Like, there's cactus on either side. And for me, it was like, there's a slope that goes straight down on one side. So you know, you have to pass on the inside, but you have to be careful not to bump the person off that slope, right? How did you handle that? Just like coming up on that conga line?
I think, you know, when you first come up on it, it's frustration. You're frustrated with it. And it's like, huh, well, this is interesting. I didn't really plan for this or think that this could happen. But after a minute, it was like, okay, like, why, what hurts if I'm walking now? You know, if we walk for the next 4 miles, great. I think there's going to be a lot of pissed off people. But if we walk for 200 yards, does it really, like, in the grand scheme of things, does it matter? Because I will be walking at one point. Like, I had no plan of running the whole thing. So while it was earlier than I had planned for, it was like, okay, so then I'm just conserving my energy. Like, no, it's no big deal. I think where I probably struggled a little bit was like, once you had space to get around them, not trying to sprint around them, but you needed a kind of sprint around them. So it was trying to not, you know, lose focus of what I had trained for and my physical capabilities, and not like exerting myself to sprint past 30 people just to get to the front and then be tired. So it was like, okay, I can pass one or two people, and just, you know, keep a nice pace. So it took some trial and error, because it wasn't the first Congo line that I got stuck in along the way. So some of it was just trial and error, and people didn't want to, you know, they weren't stepping off the trail because It's the first few miles of the race. Like, they don't want to step off the trail and have 30 people have to just stop and stand there while a bunch of people pass. So I think from their perspective as well, it's like, well, would I have pulled over? I don't know if I would have either. So I think later in the race, everybody's pulling over, right? It's,
yeah,
you come up behind somebody and they're like, please go, just go. Just
put me out of my misery apologize. And go.
Yeah. So it was just, and it was that first, again, kind of, there was no camaraderie in those first few miles, which was interesting. It was pretty like people were quiet. I just put my podcast in and my headphones on and ignored those people and just went for it.
Yeah.
But there was definitely an energy in the air that was very competitive for the first probably 10 miles for sure.
And at what point did you hit your first aid station?
The first aid station was right at mile 5 or thereabouts. So they had a pretty good one early on. So I hit my first aid station and I was already still not feeling great. I ate quite a bit in that first 5 miles, not what I should have, but I definitely ate quite a bit. I got to that first aid station, went to just top off my bladder, and I was like, holy shit, I am not drinking enough water because it's cold outside. And so I'm not drinking that much when it's cold. I'm not feeling great. You know what? I got to focus on hydration, whether I want to drink or not. So that first aid station was about 5 miles in. And then the second one was about 3 miles after that, because it was just the spot where they could put it. And then you had a pretty big gap after that. So by the time I got to the second aid station, I was for sure in a bad way. Like, I had, at that point, the stomach had decided that it hated me, and that was not something that it was wanted to do for the rest of the day, was to continue to let me run. So maybe
you should have had some like hair of the dog and like had a Red Bull, and you know what I mean? Like,
right. Red Bulls, shots of tequila, something. It started to really flip on me probably after that first aid station. So by the time I got to the second aid station, I hadn't ate anything. It was really struggling eating. And I got there and they had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I was like, I'm just going to grab this. And I'd say that was the point where it really started to get me. There were definitely, I had cell phone service the whole way, which I don't know if everybody else does this or if I'm just the idiot that, you know, doesn't care if I fall on my face. I love to text and run. So I'm like out jogging and texting and taking selfies, and I'm texting my husband and my friends the whole time. And I'm texting him, I'm like, I don't feel good. Like, I am quite literally on the verge of just puking my guts out. And he was like, well, what are you going to do about it? And I'm like, well, I have some Pepto with me, because I knew that I had already started not feeling good. So I'm going to take some Pepto and see what happens. And I take that and I'm not feeling good. And I'm texting and I'm like, I can't eat. Like, I just physically know that if I eat, I puke. And he goes, then stick your finger down your throat and just let it out. Like, just puke.
Yeah.
And one of my goals that I had written down was don't have GI issues. And here I am about to throw up. It wasn't the other way. It was just this stomach was not, my stomach was just pissed off that I hadn't given it what it needed before I decided to run. And so I just felt like crap the whole way. And I'm looking at my watch and I'm running like 11 minute miles. And I'm like, I feel like body wise, I don't feel like I'm overexerting myself. My heart rate was pretty high. It was in like the 160 range, but it was largely because I just felt like shit. And I was trying to just tell myself, keep going. Cause if you stop and you pause, you're not going to be able to you're just not going to be able to make it. There's no way that you're going to be able to keep going if you try to stop. So aid stations, I mean, I'm just stopping just long enough to grab a snack and top off my water. And it wasn't like, do not sit down, do not sit and chit chat. So it was probably the first, so the midway point where I could have a crew and a drop bag was at mile 19.4. And it was that first 19 miles that I felt like absolute dog shit. And people were passing me and it was that mental game, right? And for me, it was, I kept telling myself like, don't think about the puking, don't think about the puking, don't. And then you're thinking about the puking yep. the whole time. So I got this mantra in my head and I couldn't tell you where it was. It was probably like mile 16-ish. I got this mantra in my head and I just started focusing on mounted shooting. Like, you're doing this, you do mounted shooting. And so I sat there and I was like, you're gonna fucking win. You're gonna fucking win. You're gonna fucking win. And like, that was my mantra until I got to that aid station. And I like specifically remember a spot where you're coming down and it gets really windy, and you kind of drop into the canyon, and there's a dry riverbed at the bottom that you can see, and you know the ranch. I know, I lived there long enough that the ranch is at the end of that. And so you're kind of just smooth going through these like big swooping switchbacks, and it's through the saguaro where the first time that you really start to see saguaro cactuses. And I'm going through there, and I'm like, you're going to fucking win. And I get to this point where I was like, you fucking got it. Like, you got to keep fucking going. Like, you're not quitting. You're not giving up. If you puke the whole time, you puke the whole time. They're going to have to carry me out of here on a fucking stretcher at this point. So I got to Bumblebee, and I had told, so my mom, hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I did not want my mother at the halfway point, because my mom is so highly competitive that in my head, I was like, she's going to come up to me and be like, did you know that 232 people passed you? Because I've been counting and you're going slow. And if you continue to go this slow, you're going to end up in 450th place. And so I had said, I was like, I don't want my mom at the halfway mark. Like, I don't have a crew because my husband didn't come and he was going to be there. But I don't want my mom there because she's just going to piss me off. And that's not what I need. And I get to the halfway mark and I see her car and I can see it turning. And I was like, son of a bitch, like, there's my mom. And I know it's my mom. And so I keep running and she comes out of her car and she's like, oh, perfect timing. And so I kind of stop and walk in probably the last quarter of a mile to where my drop bag was. And she knew, I had texted her and told her that I wasn't feeling good. And she like jumped into mom mode. And it was like, it was, none of it was the competition. None of it was like, you're not good enough. You're not fast enough. You're not doing it. It was like, what do you need? You know, how are you feeling? What's going on? And I was like, well, I'm eating candy, ginger, because I have it. It's the only thing that I can eat right now. I'm not drinking enough. And I had a long sleeve shirt on at the time still. And she was like, well, I feel like you need to take off your long sleeve shirt. And like, you know, give me your pack. And like, what else is it that you need? Where's your drop bag? Let's find your drop bag. What's in there? You know, and she went through this whole, I'm talking about eating, and I was like, I don't think I can eat solids. And she goes, well, do you have liquids? And like, what does that look like? And it was kind of this like mom mode of like, what else do you need to be there versus what I had expected. So it was after I saw my mom and got to the halfway point, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I started to just automatically feel better. Was like, okay, I'm at the halfway point. I really don't have that much longer to go. It's only 20 more miles. And just having her there, I thought it made me start to feel better. So I got all my stuff. I definitely, like, she was even like, sit down, wait a little bit. Like, you don't have to get back on your feet and go. So my midway point, I definitely had no plans of being there for longer than 2 or 3 minutes. And it was about 10 minutes.
But that's still a pretty fast, like, midway, you know, aid station stop. You know what I mean? Because like, there are times I've been sucked into aid station stops where it's like 15 or 20, and you do sort of make the semi-fatal mistake of sitting down. But sometimes you actually need it. And it sounded like you really just needed to sort of like hit pause real fast, like reset your system before, to her point, you just get up and speed right out of there.
Yeah. And that was definitely what, and it was almost that like motivation that I needed. And it's funny because along the way, so all my mounted shooting friends were doing mounted shooting. So a good chunk of them were in Phoenix waiting for me, calling me crazy. And I think it's in my Facebook message. It was probably right about that point as well. And it's, I didn't have a whole lot of moments where in training where I cried. Like, I had a handful of moments where I cried, but not a ton. And I definitely cried on the trail during my race because I'm sitting there running and I'll have to look, let's see, when she first, there it is. She first texted me. So it was 10:20 a.m. and a good friend of mine who was sitting there had sent a picture, and you can see it and I can always post it, but she sent a picture of my horse.
Oh, too funny.
Staring at her, and it just says, keep going, mama.
Oh.
And that's all. And I just like burst into tears. Oh. And like I said, that 10:20 was probably right before I got to that midway point.
Yep.
And I'm like crying as I'm running down the trail, because I'm like, I have all these people cheering me on that have no clue. Like, they're not ultra runners. They don't know what I'm going through. And like, that my whole, we have a team or a group chat, and so they all knew that my stomach wasn't feeling great. But it was just that like motivation. So it was the motivation behind, you know, my friends waiting for me. It was that like mom moment where I was like, all right, I can like stop it, stupid stomach. We're going to make it through.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to the halfway point, I was in a much better place where it was like, okay, I got this. I can keep going. And I hit that halfway point at a pretty decent hour where I felt like, okay, I've got this, like, yeah, it's going to be okay. And if, you know, they were tracking. So the cool thing, and I'm never going to pronounce them right. So hopefully the people that are listening, it's Aravapa.
I've heard a couple different pronunciations, so we'll go with that one. Aravapai. Aravapai is another like pronunciation that I've heard. So I'm not the expert, but they know we're talking about them.
they know who they are. They were the ones putting on the race, and it was cool because they had all of us were chipped. And so when you ran past the flags, a lot of times it was monitoring you and it was being live tracked. And in mountain shooting, we live stream our major competitions. And so if you're not there, you can sit there and watch people and cheer them on. And they're sitting at a major competition getting ready to go because people were competing on their horses the weekend that I was running. And I'm getting messages from them. And it's like, they're sending me the results, right? So they're like, keep going. You're doing great. You know, 12-minute miles, you're, you know, 3 hours in. And like, I'm just getting all these text messages that they're sitting there tracking me and exactly where I'm at on the trail.
I love it.
And they don't know whether a 10-minute mile or a 40-minute mile is good. Like, to them, it was more just being able to, you know, tell me to keep going and give me that motivation of like, we're here, we're watching.
Well, so they understand like competition too, right? So they understand from a competition point of view, like what it's like to be doing your thing and need support and encouragement and like somebody to cheer for you. And they're just taking that skill and translating it over into running. And to your point, like, yeah, they don't know how fast is fast. Like, maybe they have some frame of reference, but they are just, you know, obviously big fans of yours and they want to cheer you on in whatever way they can.
Yeah. So it was that motivation. I think that's what kept me going. Like if I hadn't had that and had my mom, like, I feel I would have gotten to a spot where I would have quit. Like 100% feel like I would have got to a spot where I just gave up. That halfway point might have been that point. But it was definitely one of those things where having all of that, once I got there, I'm like, you made it halfway. How hard can it be to get the rest of the way?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything. It's like, you know, it's the old saying, it's like, it's downhill from here, right? Like you're on the home stretch. So were you able to eat something after the halfway point, or was it still a struggle?
It was still a struggle. And I think by that point, it wasn't a struggle of like, I still feel sick. I still wasn't 100%. So I was like eating pretzels and trying to find the most bland, dry things that I could eat. But I think 20 miles in, I had just told my body, I'm not going to eat at that point. Because I really feel like from a training perspective, like, I love to eat. That's my favorite part about ultra running. I love snacks and I love all snacks. And I just, that's my favorite part. I love to eat 4 or 5 Fig Newtons. Like, I just love to eat. And I know Julie's talked about it before and you've talked about it before. It's like, you have to keep eating because your body's going to start to reject it. And I felt like by not eating the first 20 miles, my body had gone into like, great, we're not eating today, but we're running. And so it was definitely a struggle to try to eat and find things that looked good. I absolutely 100% did not follow my nutrition plan. I didn't eat anywhere near what I should eat, but I was forcing myself to eat like gummies and, you know, applesauce, and I'd get to the aid stations and just find like, oh, you have ginger snaps. That sounds great on my stomach. Oh, orange pieces. That sounds great. So I was still intaking, but nowhere near at the quantity I should have been intaking. But there was not a spot where I just flat out was like, nope, I'm not eating anymore. I'm forcing myself to eat. It just was, like I said, absolutely not what I should be.
Yeah. And like, you know, obviously we talk a lot about that type of prep, you know, with the group and during our one-on-one calls, and you can always have the best laid plans and then they go to shit. Right. And so obviously we want to map it out. We want to know, but I think to just touch on the point that you just made, like, you knew your targets, like, you knew what you were aiming for in terms of volume and composition and that sort of thing. And you knew just by the sheer fact that your body was saying no to all food that you weren't hitting that. But then when you were trying to make calculated choices, it was like, okay, I know I'm not hitting this, but I need to take something in, right? And I just got to make the best of the situation at hand. Otherwise, you know, at some point, like, could you have gone the whole way without eating a single thing? Maybe, but like, you know, trying to get some calories in you was definitely a good choice. Remind me though, what were you putting in your bladder? Was it Tailwind?
I was just about to say, I had Tailwind the whole time. Yeah. So I kept Tailwind in my bladder. And when I got to that halfway point, I had 2 servings. I had 8 scoops of Tailwind in a bag. And I dumped the whole thing in there because I knew it was like, if anything, at least I can get my carbs and my calories that way. Mm-hmm. And be able to get something into my stomach. And so I just dumped it all in and was like, I'm just going to have this at the highest percentage possible because that's what I need right now, because there's a good chance I'm not going to eat for another 10 miles.
Yeah. You're just going to mainline Tailwind.
Fine. And then candied ginger, which I had never actually looked at what, I'm sure there's carbs in it. I'm sure there's something in it. I just kept crushing candied ginger. Yeah. And that was probably the only thing that really kept my stomach feeling good was candied ginger, and it's chewy and there's, you know, a little bit salty. And so it was kind of my go-to snack.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get through the halfway point, stomach is still a little iffy. You keep going. Was there a certain point after that where you had that feeling where you were like, okay, I'm definitely doing this. Like, I'm definitely finishing this race.
I hit a spot and it was right after the halfway mark. So I get to the halfway point and I'm kind of walking. There's this huge hill that comes out of it. And I was like, don't even try to jog up it. Like there's no point. So I'm walking and there was another woman that was walking. And I don't have my pack in here, but I have the Deuce of Spades on the back of my pack because I was like, you know what? I need to carry, it's the desert. Like I need to carry something and you just never know. And it's my first race, so I have no clue. And she's laughing and she's like, you're really like that person. You're that brave to just carry the Deuce of Spades on the back of your backpack. And I was like, heck yeah. Like I'm carrying my poop shovel on the back. Don't you worry. And so we kind of started chit-chatting and I'm walking up the hill and somehow we got into it and I was telling her that I do mounted shooting and we're just talking. And it was her second, it was her first 60K, but she had done a 50K before. So it was her second ultra. And we just chit-chatted as we walked up the hill. And then she was like, well, you're clearly going to be faster than me. Like, I'll see you later kind of a thing. And I was like, yeah, probably not. Well, we ended up, me, her, and then a younger woman ended up catching up to us. And there was three of us and we probably ran together for about 7 to 10 miles. It wasn't the fastest running. I think, you know, she kept saying, well, pass me, it's fine. I'm a little bit slower, but she had the most amazing power walk, like the most amazing power walk ever. And she kept being like, it's fine to pass. And I'm like, my jog is slower than your power walk. Like I'm enjoying learning from you of what the power walk is. So it was slower than what I had planned to do, but at the time it was what I needed. I needed to slow it down and take that pace. And so we ran together for a good chunk of it. We passed two aid stations together. I think if I remember correctly, I'm trying to look, it was only 4.6 miles to the next aid station. So I think we ran, maybe it was 1.5 aid stations that we ran. But it was nice having that camaraderie and having kind of this group of three of us women. And we were just chit-chatting and at that conversational pace where it's like, oh, where are you from? And, you know, is this your first? And the girl behind me, it was her first ultra as well. And it got my mind off of it all, where it was like, it got to that point where it's so nice to have people to just talk to and laugh with and have a good time with, that it got my mind off of everything else. So then we got to an aid station and they were, I was in my head, I was like, I'm not stopping at aid stations. I don't stop. Like I will grab snacks and I'm going to keep running with them. So I dropped him at the aid station, the next aid station, just because it was something where I knew I just had to keep going, but it was such a nice break. And I felt like that was the point where I was like, okay, I can still do this. Like I got it. It's going to be okay. So I think from there on out, for the most part, there was never a spot where I thought just give up and start quitting. And I felt like being mid to bottom of the pack, you start to get to people that are no longer competitive. And so they're out there just having fun. So like the people that I ran into along the way, you know, it was these women to start. And then, oh gosh, probably the last, oh, I don't know, 15 miles, I got behind these guys and we kept kind of jumping past each other. And kind of, we just kept leapfrogging over and over and they were firefighters. Oh, and it was the one guy had done a couple ultras and the other one, it was his very first ultra. And so there were definitely spots where he was struggling. And then there were spots where I was struggling.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of cool to have that camaraderie. And like the guy that had done a few ultras was like hanging out and joking. Like he clearly looked like he could go for another 200 miles. And like, he was waiting on us, like, you slow asses keep going. But it was that same thing to have like this group of slower people, to be honest, of us that were just joking with each other and making light of it. And like, we got to one spot that I remember where, so we had, there was a river crossing. And so you cross the river, which was hands down the most glorious thing I've ever done in my life, was like knee deep freezing cold water. Felt so good on your feet and your joints. And people were panicking about the fact that there's this giant river crossing because they've got so much rain. And I was ready for the river crossing. Yeah. And you get it. I'm like, this feels like I could just lay down in here. This feels amazing. But we cross it. And then you had to kind of come up this big switchbacky hill. And we're getting towards the top. And I'm sitting there and I'm trying to like keep my pace. And I'm like hiking myself up the hill. And I look at one of the firefighters. I'm like, you're a firefighter. When do you start backpacking people out of here? Like, give me a freaking piggyback on. So it was just nice to have this group of people. I think that, like I said, that bottom middle of the pack people that just were ready to joke with each other and have a good time. And I felt like that was the ultra camaraderie that I'd always heard about in the spot where it was like, oh, I can do this. Like, we're just going to all be friends and like hang out and we're all going to get through this together.
Yeah.
So that felt, that's when it was like, yep, there's no way that I can stop now.
Yeah. It's sort of interesting that you had like a full 180, you know, from the beginning of the race where you were like, oh man, all these elites and people are sprinting, to like the other end of the spectrum where you guys are talking about like hoofing it out together, like throwing each other over each other's shoulders, you know, or like pulling each other along. That's sort of, you know, that ultra community, like everybody, like how can we get everybody moving? How can we help? How can we get you to accomplish your goal? It's not just about me. Yes, it's about me. I want to finish, but it's also about you. Like, how can I help you type of a thing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was, like I said, the whole last part of the race was just that way. And the aid station people were great. You know, what can we do to help? Do you want ice? And they definitely were helping push people along. And so it was really great to see that. And it was like, oh, okay, this is what everybody's talking about. Like now I feel it.
Yeah. So did your mom make it all the way back into the finish line? Was she there for you to finish?
Yep. She was there for the finish. She took pictures. So they had a professional photographer, but that's what my mom does as well. She's a professional photographer. So they let her jump over the fence and take pictures of me as I was finishing. And she's telling the guy, like, I promise I'll buy your pictures too. And it was pretty funny. So she was there at the finish line. That it, you know, it was definitely like, what do you need? Can I carry anything for you? And I was like, I just want a fucking quesadilla. They had like warm quesadillas at the end. And it was finally to that point where it's like, yep, now I'm hungry.
Yep.
Like now my body's like, okay, you gotta eat things. And my mom had to drive back up to Flagstaff. And so she had, my car was ready for me at the finish line. And so we kind of stood around and chit chatted for a bit. And, but I knew like, if I stop and don't move, the drive back is going to be really brutal.
Yep.
So I was like, cool, 5 minutes. Thanks for coming. Have a good drive home. And like, let me get back to my car. I got to get going.
Yeah.
So she was there and it was cool. They had, you know, a big spot at a ranch. And so there was like music and they had a huge TV where you could watch everybody finish. And, it was just cool to see all the people that were still there at the end and cheering people on, even though, you know, we were the slower group of people. That happened. I happened to be there when this 100K, I had stopped to pick up my pack when the 100K elite finishers were coming in to that. And that was their a little bit longer than their halfway mark, I think. And it was crazy to see how many people were there for those elite athletes at that drop station. So there weren't quite that many there at the finish line when I finished, but there was still a lot of people and hanging out in food trucks and music and all sorts of things.
That's awesome. So you hopped, you basically just got right back in your car and drove back to the horses.
Yep. Got back in the car. I have seat warmers, which are a blessing in disguise. So I turned on my seat warmers and drove the hour plus back to where the horses were. And I'm like, it was right about 5:30-ish. And I remember texting my friends and I was like, you guys are waiting for me for dinner, right? Like I need somebody to drive me because I'm not sure if I can make it to dinner by myself, but like I need food. And so, you know, where are we going for dinner? Please wait for me. So I drove back and.
That's funny because a lot of people, when they get to the end of an ultra, are the exact opposite. They're like, I'm not hungry because I've been eating for the last X number of hours, right? Where you were the complete opposite. You were like, I've been nibbling for the last X number of hours and now I'm hungry. So feed me.
And it was like hungry and need a freaking beer.
Yeah.
And I hadn't drank a beer for like 45 days leading up to the race just because I didn't want that dehydration. And I was like, guys, I just need a beer and a steak at this point. Like I need protein and a freaking beer. They grabbed me and they're like, you know, we stop and like my horses are fed and everything's taken care of. And they're like, all right, you know, we're going to Santan's and let's go. And so we went and, you know, again, having just the greatest group of friends that do mountain shooting, like they purchased my dinner And I was like, you guys have babysat for my animals for the last 2 days. Like, you don't need to buy me something. And they were like, no, it's like our congratulations. And they took me out and, you know, asked me what I needed and all of that kind of stuff. And so yeah. It was just great having that support crew.
That's awesome.
Once I got back and being able to have that. So it was pretty special.
Now I'm curious, like, how did the competition go? Because it was like a couple of days later, right? So when most people would just be like recovering and hanging out, you were preparing to do your mounted shooting.
Yeah. So the race was on Sunday and the competition started on Wednesday. And I had to work the whole time. We have offices down in Phoenix. And so I actually was supposed to go into the office while I was there. And I woke up Monday morning at 7 o'clock and I was like, I can't move. Like, I can't put on dress clothes and go sit at a desk all day.
Yeah.
So like, I call my boss and I'm like, so I'm going to do one of those work from home weeks. I hope you don't mind. Like, it's either I'm taking a sick day or I'm work from home. Mm-hmm. So I ended up working from home on Monday. And then on Tuesday, I was like, I got to get on a horse and see if I can ride a horse. Like, I still am pretty sore. My knees were, it was a net downhill race. So my knees were pretty darn sore. I've never had knee soreness like that in my life. But they were pretty sore. And I was like, I'm not sure I can get on a horse with my knees this sore. And I was walking a lot just to stretch. And so I got on my horse and while he's 23 years old, he is not a horse that I would put anybody on. He's 90% psychotic and 10% okay. And so it's not like you get on and it's this joyous like trail ride and we're going slow. Like, you get on him in an arena where he knows there's competition happening and he's rearing and he's bouncing and he's bucking and he's kicking and like nothing feels normal and you're all over the place and legs are flailing everywhere. So I get on him and that's what we're doing for 30 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, I don't feel like I'm going to fall off. So I feel like we're going to be okay. So it was a quick ride and I was like, I think I'm going to make it. So, less than 2 days after finishing the race, I was able to ride him. And then the competition started and, I had none of the mental angst that I've had before mounted shooting. So usually I am getting ready to go out and the amount of times I've thrown up or I have to run to the bathroom is probably 80% of the time. Small competition, big competition. I don't eat because I'm nervous. I'm shaking the whole time. I feel like I'm going to puke. I've gagged so many times, like literally sitting there getting ready to go and like, hold your throw up till you finish. And it's always that first stage. And I had none of that. I had absolutely none of it. So I got into the first stage and it was just like, all right, buddy, we got this. Like, let's just do our freaking thing. And I put in music when I run. And so I put on my music and I turn it all the way up. And like, I just felt this sense of calm. So we go out and our first stage is one that's kind of my nemesis. And we go up to do it. I missed three balloons. I don't miss three balloons. And the whole game is to be fast, but you have 10 balloons that you're trying to shoot. You have to shoot your 10 balloons. I missed three of them. When you miss three balloons at an upper level, you're not winning. Like, just flat out, you are out of it. There is no chance in hell that you're going to win. So first stage, I go out and miss three balloons. And I'm just laughing. Like, I'm having the best time of my life. My horse feels great. It never went through my head. Like, I never got angry. I never got frustrated. I'm just laughing the whole time. I was like, well, he feels great. Clearly, like, 23 years old. And here we are, you know, just ran ultra marathon. Here we are. So we miss our three balloons. I get out. I'm not frustrated. I'm proud of what my horse has done. And right after that, you have about 12 seconds to get to the next stage. So you have to get done. You know, you do your thing. You unload your gun. You walk to the next one. You load your gun and you go. Mm-hmm. So the next one, same thing. Like, I go out, I feel pretty good, drop four balloons. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I can't hit the broadside of a fucking barn today. But it was never, I had none of the anxiety. I had none of the frustration towards myself or my horse. Hands down, the worst shoot that I've ever had in my career as a mountain shooter. I missed 10 out of 50 balloons. So not a good percentage. There was no way that I was going to win anything at that point. But it was so cool. And my music is at full blast because I don't like to hear other people. And it goes to some of that mental game stuff. So I never heard any of it, but the announcers are friends of mine. I've been doing the sport long enough. A lot of people knew who I was and they kept announcing like, and here comes Kim. She just ran 40 miles yesterday. And like, here she is riding horses. And so they kept announcing it and just making it, but that appreciation, that support and the amount of people, there was about 280 shooters, I think. I'd have to go back and look. And the amount of people that came up to me and was like, it's impressive what you've done and tell us more and we want to know about it. And it was just having all of these people come up and be like, oh, that's really freaking cool. It's so awesome. And tell us more, like, why did you do it? Are you just crazy? And that kind of a thing. And there's some runners, not a whole lot, but there's some runners that do mountain shooting, but it was so nice to have people come and support me and tell me that they were just proud of me and impressed with what I did. So worst shoot that I've ever had, but from a mental perspective, it was the best shoot that I've ever had, which was really what my goal was. The last day, I guess we ended on Saturday. So on Friday, I got a chiropractic adjustment. One of the women is a chiropractor that's actually in my class and I compete against, and I had her give me an adjustment. And I'm sitting there telling her, and I was like, I'm just jacked up. Like, I can tell that my body is jacked up. It's not pain. Like, I have no shooting pains, but like, I just need something because it just feels stiff and wrong. And she's adjusting me, and she was like, and you really decided that you were going to shoot after this? And I was like, well, apparently this is why I dropped fucking balloons, Kim. and she's adjusting me, and she's like, you need to go see your chiropractor like the second you are back in Colorado, because your back, like your spine is just not well. And I was like, probably not. Like, I haven't had a chiropractic adjustment in 6 months. Like, it's probably not good. You're right.
Yeah.
But after she adjusted me the very last stage of the day, or the competition, I was clean. We were fast. Like, we had probably one of the best runs that we've ever had. So I ended really strong. In that case, I think I was like second in our class out of the 10 or 12 girls that were in the class. So I finished it out really strong and was just excited to finish it out. And it was just so nice to have, like I said, the camaraderie and the people coming up and just, you know, congratulating me.
Yeah.
Even though I clearly had the worst shoot that I've ever had.
Yeah, but I think like that goes to, you know, when you expand the hard things that you choose to do, like I feel as though I'd be curious to hear from you, like what happens the next time you go to a competition? Like, do you still have the nerves, or has the ultra sort of helped you realize like, okay, yes, I can overcome, because you overcame a shitload of issues in order to, like, from the time you left Colorado to the time that you got to the competition, like through the ultra and to the competition, like you overcame so much stuff. And I feel like that's the benefit of ultras. And I mean, you certainly would have had some of those things happen even if you were just going to the competition. But now that you have sort of put yourself through the paces, so to speak, right? When you shoot, it's you and the horse. But now this was like totally on you, and you put yourself through that and overcame a ton of stuff. And I feel like when I hear you tell that story, to me, it just feels like you've built up a lot of confidence in yourself, and you've like, you went through so much to finish that race that now you're like, okay, whatever happens, happens. And I'm just going to roll with the punches. Did I do my best? No, I'm just going to try again the next time and the next time and the next time. And then obviously like on day five, you were back where you wanted to be. And now you also have like some new tools in that like mindset toolbox, so to speak, that you can use going forwards.
Yeah. And we actually had a competition last weekend. So it was the first one after that, because we don't stop competing because it's winter.
Yeah.
And it definitely led into it. Right. And some of it was because in Colorado, we're all friends. And so we've all known each other for a really long time. So it's just a good group of women that you're friends with and you can joke around with. But I didn't have the anxiety as much as I've had. And it felt good. And, you know, was able to just sit around and chit chat and not get in my head and be able to have fun, because I think that's what had happened, is mountain shooting wasn't fun anymore for me, because it had gotten to a point where I was so in my head. And I try to tell myself, I don't make money doing this. I spend money doing this. It's not a career. It will never be a career. We don't make money in that sport. It's not rodeo. It's not something like, if I win, even at a major, I might win $1,000. If I'm lucky, I win $1,000 and it cost me $2,500 to get there.
Yeah.
Like it's, you're not making money at it. And so I always try to tell myself that, but it didn't really click, where it's like, you're putting yourself through all this stress and this frustration when, why? Like you're not, yes, you want to win. Yes, you're competitive. Yes, you want to prove that you deserve to be where you're at. But at the end of the day, like you're not making money. You're not going to destroy your reputation. You're not going to, you know, lose your home or lose your family because you fell off your horse or you did something wrong. And so it was, I think it's starting to change. And I'm actually, we have a magazine for mountain shooting And so I'm writing an article for it as well. And so some of it was like writing down my thoughts. Mm. And right now I'm at 4 pages and I have to somehow get it down to one. But some of it was just being able to write down my thoughts afterwards of like, what are some of the things that I learned along the way? And how does that relate to mounted shooting? How does it relate to life in general? And I think it, you know, it's all around the mental game and practicing with intent and having a plan and having a schedule and knowing that not everything's perfect. Not every practice is going to be perfect. You're going to make mistakes along the way. You're going to have things that, like you said, adversity that comes in and impacts you. And then focusing on you and focusing on you only, whether it's in work, whether it's in mounted shooting, whether it's in ultra running, that focus on me was something that I had to get over. It was like, stop focusing on all these other people and the fact that they're doing things better than you. It is your race. It is your run. It is your time. Focus on you and what you can control, because there's only so many things that you can control. And you don't know what the next person's going through. And I kind of wrote something as I'm putting this together. And one of the things that I wrote down is, and I'd have to find where I pulled it up. But I was thinking about it and I always focus on what other people are doing and I'm like, oh, well, they must do all these things better than me, or they must do this and they're so good at this. And I was like, and everybody should have been looking at me, whether I dropped 10 balloons or not. Like, I had to shift my mindset and be like, those people should have been looking at me. She ran 40 miles and showed up and shot a horse. What the fuck did you do today? And like, that was one of those things that like, it kind of started to click, where it's like, you just don't know what somebody's gone through. So you can't look at somebody having a bad day or a good day and compare yourself, because we all have that, you know, we all have those struggles and we all have those great days where, you know, you're out there and you're just kicking butt and taking names and it is what it is. And so I do think by writing it down, it's also really helped me recognize the things that I did and I accomplished, which is cool.
Yeah. We sort of talked about that the other night during one of our calls, where we were talking about like, sort of like the dip that you go through after you race, and like actually spending time processing, and, you know, whether that's journaling or like talking to other people, but actually going through and reflecting and processing on what you did and the accomplishments, the highs, the lows. I feel like when I do that, I take more away from it and I'm able to see things a little more clearly, rather than just be like, well, that sucked, on to the next, or, well, that was great, on to the next. Like, you sort of lose the lesson if you don't go through the process of processing, so to speak. And so I love that you took the time that you're doing this article, but like, you actually taking the time to write down all those thoughts really helped you to like solidify all the things that you learned along the way.
Yeah. And it's crazy to me. I've told a lot of people this, is like, I'm an executive at a firm, and a Fortune 500 firm, and I don't have that same anxiety and I don't have that same stuff. And it's like, how did I overcome it at work? How is it that I don't, you know, I still have imposter syndrome at work and I still have that comparison, but I know that I'm better at work. Like, I go into it knowing that I'm the best person walking into the room. And it's like, where did I get that cockiness at work? Is it because I'm getting paid for it? So like, I get paid based on my experience and what I don't know. I don't know why I can have that at work and feel confident about myself, but then I get into something else that I'm doing for fun and I lose that confidence. And I really think the ultra running has helped kind of both areas as well. Like, I've had some eye-opening areas when it comes to work, but it's just, I had no expectation or no intent to go out and win. And I remember having one of the 13-year-old girls that does mounted shooting. She goes, so are you going to win? And I started laughing. And then when I looked, like, I just have to send out kudos to those people that finished both the 100K and the 60K. The people that the people that won the 100K, the man did it in like 7 hours and 30 minutes. And the woman did it in just under 8 hours, or like barely over 8 hours. That is incredible.
Yeah.
Those athletes are so incredible that they finished 100K that quickly.
Yep.
And it was similar for the 60K, right? They're doing it in sub 4 hours for a 60K. And it is so incredible to see those athletes. And I had no thought of comparing myself to them, because how could I? I'm not a sponsored athlete. It's my first one. There was not a chance in hell, no matter how hard I trained, that I was going to come out and run anything in 4 or 5 hours, let alone 6 or 7 hours at that point. So it's being able to look and have the appreciation for like, those people have worked their butts off to get where they are. And they're absolutely incredible athletes who are doing what they need to do. And their mental game has got to be there. They're in peak physical shape. And not all of them are 18-year-old athletes. They're, you know, I didn't look at the ages, but they're 40, they're 50, they're 60 years old, and they're out there kicking my butt. And I had no comparison to them. It was just like, yeah, they're awesome. Like, I had an appreciation versus in mounted shooting, where I struggle more of like having the appreciation for the people that are doing better than me that day.
So interesting, right? I love it.
Yeah.
So if someone else is listening to this and they're sort of in the same boat, like they want to just jump right into ultras, maybe they're running a couple miles here or there, like you were back in the beginning. And they've like got this idea in the back of their brain that they want to run an ultra, but maybe, you know, someone is telling them that's crazy, you'll never be able to do it. Do you have any thoughts or like words of advice that you'd want to pass along to them?
Yeah, I think being able to have, and it goes to something that my horse trainer tells me all the time. So I work with an older gentleman who will never listen to this, by the way, because he doesn't even text message. But I work with an older horse trainer. And when I'm working with my baby horse in particular, so our baby horse is somewhat of a shithead. Like, he's really, really hard to work with. And he's tried to kill me numerous times. And he always tells me that you have to have intent. And I've heard it for years from him, is you have to have intent. So what's your intent? And so being able to, whether you write it down or you just think about it, it's like, what is your intent behind doing this? Is your intent to win? Because if that's your only intent, you might disappoint yourself, because you get into a race like me where all of a sudden you're like, wow, I'm against these elite athletes sponsored by Nike. If my intent was to win, I would have been disappointed in myself. So every day setting the intent and recognizing that your intent changes. And so setting that intent in the morning is really important. And something that he tells me, is something that I've heard you talk about as well, of like, what's your intent? Is your intent for that run to go out and practice nutrition? Great. Then don't focus on the time. Don't focus on how your body feels. Focus only on your nutrition. Is your intent to go faster? Great. Then focus on that day. And so always having those intents and being able to go through without having that purpose and that idea of what it is that you want to do, whether somebody says that you can or you can't do it. And I think that's an important thing to learn. So I was somebody that told everybody, like quite literally everybody at work, quite literally everybody in mounted shooting knew that I did it, because I needed people to hold me accountable. And for me, that's what mattered, was to have that accountability and have somebody that would be able to be like, oh, so when's your race? Are you running? How's training going? But that doesn't necessarily mean that I took into account what they had to say. So I had the people that were like, you're crazy. Why are you doing this? You're insane. And you have to not let that impact you. So my intent behind telling them was so somebody could hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. So somebody could be able to ask me questions about it. And I had a handful of other people that were like, hell yeah, you're a badass. Like, look at you go. I can't believe that you're doing it. And yeah, well, that made me feel better. It wasn't what I was going for. And so you have to figure out, you know, I know you talked about it before, like, I didn't tell anybody. I just went out and ran my race.
Yeah.
And that was your intent, is like, you didn't want to have the negativity, and then, you know, then it turns into self-doubt, and then it turns into this. So just always being able to think through, like, why are you doing those things, and breaking it down into steps. Like, it's so important when you're getting into it and trying to decide whether it's something that you want to do, because you will have ups and downs and self-doubt and a lot of pain along the way. And it's important that you're doing it for what's in you and your reasons behind it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with that, especially because you are going to go through all the ups and downs, and you'll lose the motivation, the internal drive pretty quickly if it's not something that you're attached to. Like, if you're just doing it because someone else said you should, or you get talked into it, but you're sort of like, I'm not really sure, then you're not going to probably see the whole thing through, which is fine. But if you really want to do it, then you got to, like you said, I love that you use the word intent, because you really got to set the intention. You got to, you know, sort of like reaffirm it every single day and show up and do the work. Again, like, I think I used this analogy the other day on a call where I was like, it just came to me like, oh, you know, like a stone sculptor, they don't just create this, you know, statue in one day. Like, it takes time, and they chip away at it in tiny, tiny little pieces. And then eventually they can unveil the whole thing, but it's a process, and they have to show up with intention and like intentionally touch that piece of stone in a certain way that's going to yield a specific outcome. It's going to look a specific way. And it's sort of the same principle that we use with training and ultras. You have to, if you're just sort of like, you know, like I say all the time, like, if you're just sort of winging it, or you're just doing whatever strikes you on that day, you probably A, won't make it to race day. And B, if you do, you won't be prepared. You won't have gone through some of the ups and downs you need to go through in training in order to show up on race day and be ready to go. even if, you know, you don't think anything's going to happen to you, things will happen, as you've very accurately demonstrated. You could have all sorts of things happen. And you need to go through some of those in training in order to sort of like weather the storm that is race day.
Yeah. And I think, so, I talk about a little bit about my work, but I'm in risk management. And we talk about it all the time in risk management as well. Like, you have to take the risks, though. Like, I'm in risk management and I don't want the risks and I don't want things to happen because we're trying to prevent those. But in life, like, you still, I tell my employees all the time, like, you still have to be okay taking those risks and being okay to make those mistakes. Because like you said, just like a sculptor, there's so many mistakes. And if you ask that sculptor, they're going to tell you there's so many mistakes, but you don't see it from the outside. Yep. And it's the same in everything else. It's like, if you're working towards a certain goal, you're going to make so many mistakes along the way. Things are going to go wrong. Stuff's going to fly at you. But the person at the end doesn't realize that. So like, nobody at the end of my race realized that I had stomach problems. Nobody watching me run realized, you know, that I cried 2 days earlier or that I have horses or whatever it may be. They're just seeing the output. And they're seeing of like, I'm proud of you. You made it through. That person beat me. You know, that person was better than me. They did that. Well, yeah, but we had a lot of mistakes and a lot of learnings along the way. And it's so important to realize that nobody in this life ever in anything has done it and just come out one day and been like, yeah, I'm going to run an ultra marathon and wins without any challenges. They're just like, I got off the couch and was like, yep, running 100K and here I am winning it.
Yeah.
There's so much that goes into it that you don't see as an outsider. Yeah. You're just looking at the end result and being jealous of it or whatever it may be. So it's gotta be what you're focused on and what's good for you, because there will be ups and downs along the way.
Yeah. So I guess that leads me into my next question, which is like, what are you going to focus on next?
So my horse competition season, while it always is ongoing, it really ramps up in the summertime. And that's usually when I'm gone for weeks at a time. So there's a race here in Colorado that you run from Manitou Springs up and then you go around Rampart Reservoir and back. It's a 50 miler. In my head, I had plans. I was like, I'm going to do the 50 miler because it's not that much more than the 60K that I just did. We're still having snow and ice. And I'm really honest, I am so done running in snow and ice and mud. I'm still getting out there. I'm still running. I actually have a training plan, but Sarah had said something. So shout out to Sarah in one of our coaching calls where she was like, well, focus on like, what do you want to focus on in your next race? Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be go out and run a 50 mile and up that mileage. Mm-hmm. Maybe you run a race and you focus on something like your nutrition or your shoes, or like for me, running with poles. Mm-hmm. I realized after my race that I think I'd really love to try running with poles because I think it would really benefit me coming, you know, up and downhill and some of the mountain races.
Yeah.
So while I had plans to run the 50 mile, I think I'm going to actually bump it down. I might end up doing the 25K or the 30K. And find something to practice on. And I have different things that I'm practicing on along the way. So since I finished my race, there's a couple of things that I realized that I want to focus on more. One was strength. And while I did a lot of strength training, I felt like I didn't put enough intent into my strength training and the areas that I needed to focus on, my hips, my knees, my ankles. Mm. And I was going through the motions, but I wasn't putting enough focus on that part of my body of like, okay, so I can sit there and I can do squats, but am I doing them correctly? Mm-hmm. Am I, you know, pushing my knees out in the correct way? Am I doing all of that kind of stuff? And so for me, it's focusing hard on the strength portion of it. And I'm focusing a lot more on walking. Mm-hmm. I found that out, the girl that I walked with for quite a bit, that power walking, where I was like, well, I did some walking, but my walking was to get my heart rate down. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to walk up this hill and I'm going to get my heart rate down. And so I'd go through it and do that, but I didn't focus on the speed walking portion of it. So I'm focusing a lot more on speed walking versus walking to slow my heart rate down. So I don't think I'm going to end up doing the 50 miler. I'm still going to end up doing the race. I have to figure out what distance I want to do and what focus I want to have. It's like, is it form? Is it walking more? Is it something like that? But I fully have plans of doing a 50 miler or 100K. There's a couple of good ones that are in this fall time. So after my main mountain shooting competitions are over, being able to focus on the actual running portion in the September, October timeframe. And I think having that focus on strength and some of the aspects of the race that I wasn't too thrilled with myself will really help for that next race. So that's kind of my plans for the future.
I love it. I love the idea of using an actual race and not just a long run on the weekend or whenever you do them, to practice stuff like that, because I think it does sort of give you the added element of, oh, this is actually race day, right? And even if it's sort of like a low stakes environment where, you know, you're not trying to win, it's, you're still sort of, you have like your eye on competition because it is race day a little bit, right? So I love that you're going to use that as a way to practice some of those things that you tried. You tried to practice those things, like, or do execute those things during your race, and the stars just didn't align, like things just didn't work out that way. So being able to do it in a competition or a competitive environment, like on a race, something that's shorter, that you can still, and you could practice multiple things, like you were talking about poles and the nutrition, you know, just try and do that. Because then when you get to your next big race, your 50 miler, you will have had the opportunity to be sort of in that competitive environment on a race day, doing those things sort of with a little bit of pressure, maybe like a little bit of tension because it is a race. And then it won't feel like, ooh, it's race day, you know, like the weight of race day. Like, now I have to do all of these things. You can be like, well, actually, I already did them in this other race. I know that strategy works, or I know that strategy doesn't work, and I've been working on that up to this point, this bigger race, this longer race, my A race, the one that I'm really invested in.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's what's important to me, is trying to figure out all of those things. And there might be some races across the summer as well that I end up similar, you know, jumping in there doing things. But the other thing is focusing on races that are close to the house. I'd love to do a race that's near my house to see how it feels versus traveling somewhere and going through all the stresses behind it. I want to drive 10 minutes down the road and run. In a race setting, like you said, so that way it's race day versus before. Not to say that I won't travel for races. When we travel, we never go and sit on a beach somewhere. We travel and we're like, let's backpack for 200 miles. Yeah. Let's do this. And so I'm sure there will be lots of ultras in my future where it's like, let's go to Portugal and run an ultra. So there'll be a lot of that, but practicing a couple close to home where you don't have the added stress of travel is definitely key for me as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on here and share your wealth of knowledge and experiences with everyone. I think people are really going to learn a lot just from, you know, you having all of those ups and downs during training and on race day. And just to be able to hear, I know I've gotten lots of messages from people who are like, I just enjoy hearing other people's stories because it makes me feel like I'm normal, right? Like I'm going through these ups and downs, or that I'm not alone, especially if you're someone who doesn't have friends or like have a community of people like you do in your mounted shooting community that can like translate over that idea, right, into your running. So if you're if you are one of those people, like I know that they love these kinds of episodes because it sort of gives them that like pseudo, you know, this virtual community that they can sort of tap into when they don't have that in real life. So I really appreciate you spending the time and hanging out with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed that episode. I mean, come on. I just want to give a big fat shout out to Kim for being such an amazing example to all of us of what is possible, especially what's possible when you just have a dream, you set your mind to it, you show up and do the work consistently, and you don't give up, especially if you are thrown multiple curveballs, multiple obstacles and challenges. Never give up. So thank you, Kim, for sharing your amazing story with us. If you guys would like to spend some more time around amazing women like this, I've got a couple options for you, a couple places you can go. The first is to join my private Facebook that is exclusively for women. We have had a few guys try to join, and while we wholeheartedly support you, guys, this group is exclusively for women. It's over on Facebook, so just search Run Your First 50K. Under groups, hit the little button that says request to join, and make sure you answer those questions, guys. I won't let people in unless they answer the questions, because it helps me A, to know whether or not you're real or fake, because we have had quite a few bots try to infiltrate the group, and I do my best to keep them out. To date, I don't think we have any in there.
But I manage another Facebook group, side note, like for the town that I live in, and we have a ton of bots that try to join that group. So I do my best to filter them out. So hopefully we've done a good job here, but that's the whole reason. That's one of the reasons, I should say, why I have you answer those questions. The second reason is so that I can get to know you better. Like, what are you working on? How did you hear about me? Why did you join? Because then I can share content and create content, not only here on the podcast, but inside the Facebook group, that will help you achieve your goal. And just as a general reminder, you guys, my personal goal is to help 10,000 women run their first 50K. Okay, that's why I do this podcast. That's why that group exists. And then that's why my second option for you also exists. And that is my private coaching membership called She Runs Ultras. And actually, this is really well timed, you guys, because in basically 2 weeks, on Monday, April 1st, I'm going to open the doors to the membership again. Okay. And this is sort of a one-stop shop where you can get coaching and training plans and strength videos and mobility practices and community, all of the things that you need in order to be successful. And especially if you don't have anybody in your life that understands why you want to run or doesn't run, or they don't quite get why you're so quote unquote crazy and you want to do long distances, or why you want to go off into the woods by yourself for 4 hours. Right? So this is a place where we all get that. That's what we subscribe to. That's what we're working towards. And you don't have to have run your first 50K to join that group. Inside that membership, I give you the Run Your First 50K training plan. And we've got all sorts of resources to support you. We have monthly get-togethers with the rest of the crew. We're going to do a kettlebell workshop actually today. So today's Thursday. And tonight we're going to do a kettlebell workshop. So we've always got stuff going on in there to help you get to your goal. So in order for you to get on the list, to get the invite, to join the group, you've got to go to SheRunsUltras.com. There's a little button in the upper right-hand corner that says get notified. Click that, put your name and email on the list, and watch your inbox on Monday, April 1st. And I'll say it again, it is not an April Fool's joke. This is the only time for the next 3 months that you're going to be able to join, because I only open the membership 4 times a year. I also just want to say that if you have a summer or early fall race, this is the time to get into the membership, because I like to get people in there 20 weeks in advance of their race so they have ample time to train. Now, that's not to say that if you have less than 20 weeks, you shouldn't join, because for sure, if you are lacking direction, if you need coaching, if you're feeling lost, or you just want more kick-ass women to hang out with, that's a place to be. But if you're like, oh, I'll join the July opening, that might be too late. Okay, so just keep that in mind. So April 1st, Monday, April 1st, spots are going to be limited. They're going to sell out, you guys. And that's not me trying to like scare tactic you guys into this. Like I, because I spend a lot of time in there and I give 110%, which I know is super cliche, but I throw all of my effort into helping the women inside that membership. I don't take hundreds of people. I take a limited number of people so that I can get to know you. I coach you one-on-one every month. I coach you every week on our weekly group coaching call. So you're getting lots of one-on-one time, lots of help, lots of, lots of support, and not only from me, but from the rest of the group as well. So Monday, April 1st, go to SheRunsUltras.com right now. Don't wait and forget. Go now and put your name on that list and snag yourself a spot on Monday when the membership registration goes live. Okay. I hope you guys are having a fabulous day, a fabulous weekend. Get your long runs in this weekend. And if we are not already friends over on Instagram, come find me at Find Your Ultra. I'll see you guys there. That's all for this episode, you guys. Enjoy this beat, and I'll see you all soon.